We're going to get to your WWE Week in Review in just a minute with thoughts on The Undertaker's tribute throughout SmackDown, the horror women's championship match between Bayley and Nikki Cross set for Extreme Rules, Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler at Extreme Rules, and everything else. So let's get this thing going right after this. This podcast is sponsored by the Ever Collection. The designer brand brought you Shaquille O'Neal's Dunkman eyewear, Snooki, Jersey Shore, and K. Michael sunglasses. With over 300 styles and colors to choose from, you'll find the perfect pair for summer. Visit their website at evercollection.nyc. That's evercollection.nyc for 15% off your purchase if you use the code WWE15 at checkout. Again, head on over to evercollection.nyc and use WWE15 for 15% off of your purchase.
Dynamite Sports. We put the in sports. Swagfulness lifestyle, defined as aspirational living blended with an unquenchable taste for the arts, fashion, sports, and technology. One having an authentic display towards this swagfulness lifestyle. Dynamite Sports. We put the in sports. Swagfulness lifestyle, defined as aspirational living blended with an unquenchable taste for the arts, fashion, sports, and technology. One having an authentic display towards this swagfulness lifestyle.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Welcome, guys, to the WWE Podcast on this Sunday, June 28th, 2020. Hope everyone's doing well as we're about to close out the month of June and head into the hottest month of the year, that obviously being July. So we are rolling through the summer, folks. I mean, before you know it, it's going to be fall, and that happens very quickly, especially up here in the northeast of the United States. Things get cold quickly, so I do not complain about the heat that we get. The little heat that we get, I really, really make a concerted effort to not complain about it because it doesn't last long, and then we go into, like, you know, 16 months of winter and cold and rain and snow and scraping off your car and all. Just it's brutal. I mean, those that live in the northern half of the United States understand what I'm talking about. But so nonetheless, July is proving to be, it looks like it's going to be a better month. At least let's hope so, because sports seem to be ratcheting back up. You know, baseball appears to be starting in late July, July 24th, 25th timeframe. The NBA Finals coming back, right? I mean, so hopefully things look up. And I know that cases worldwide, or in the United States anyway, are starting to spike. But let's hope that that trend does not continue and it doesn't continue. It doesn't result in a renewed lockdown. I don't think anybody can take mentally another lockdown, nor can the economy honestly take another lockdown. So hopefully, with that being said, as it translates to wrestling talk, that we eventually get real fans back in the arena in a large capacity. And when I say large, I would even take 25% at this point. It's all relative now. Obviously, I would love 100% capacity back. We all would. But boy, even those small amount of fans at the Performance Center make such a difference in presentation, don't they? It really, really, really helps the show. It makes it feel like things are coming back. And I don't care if people are in the audience wearing masks anymore. I thought that would be a big deal to me. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. To me, the fact is that there's noise. There's noise. There's emotion. And there's an immediate reaction to what I'm seeing. That's the key to me. So I don't care from a production standpoint or from a visual standpoint if people are wearing masks anymore. I just don't care. So a lot to talk about today. And I do not have a co-host with me today, so that's okay. I'm running solo, and sometimes these shows are still fun because I get out of here at a reasonable time. I love my co-hosts and all the shows that we do. And but the benefit is that I can get done with this quicker, which means I also can go to bed quicker. So selfishly, this is really the only good thing for me beyond being able to have a co-host. So don't worry, though. Tuesday, I have a co-host lined up for the Raw review. Wednesday will be nostalgia, and then I'll have another co-host, I promise, next weekend. So no worries. Co-hosts will be back. It won't be all me. So, all right. Well, before we get, as I said, a ton to talk about with the Undertaker's tribute on SmackDown as a direct result of the announcement, I guess you could call it an announcement, by the Undertaker on his fifth chapter of The Last Ride, a docuseries on the WWE Network that I haven't heard a single bad word about. You know, one of the best things WWE's ever done. Certainly the effort was shown there, and it was captivating, and it was all of the above. I mean, pick your adjective. And with The Undertaker apparently announcing his retirement, which, look, let me just say this up front. The way that it ended, I know that I see, and I continue to be on board that I believe Undertaker's done. But, here's the thing. We all know never say never in this business. That's such a, it's a cliche at this point. And it's a joke with The Undertaker at this point of how many times he's retired. But The Undertaker never flat out said, yeah, that was my last match. I'm done. I'm retired. He never said that. He just said, and this time the cowboy really does ride off into the sunset. He said if Vince needs him in a pinch, would he? Maybe. Right? So the door is left open, folks. The door is left open, so why everyone is taking this as a written gospel that The Undertaker is definitely done, and even the production on SmackDown seemed to try to suggest that with the tribute show. Obviously, Undertakers do a lot more than just a tribute show, but just be mindful that the way that Undertaker phrased it on his documentary, that if Vince needed him in a pinch, that's the key phrase here. That is the key phrase, that he might. So, and if you think that Undertaker is not going to appear at the 30th anniversary of his debut at Survivor Series this year, I mean, I don't know how anybody can miss that. And how WWE doesn't see The Fiend and Undertaker coming face to face, how that interaction doesn't happen is beyond me. And to be honest, that is how I would have The Undertaker go out. I know that it's very poetic in the way that he had his match, like if you want to call it that, at WrestleMania. I understand all of the symbolism, the unholy trinity, which was really just a metaphor for himself as a person, Mark Calloway, the American Badass, and the Dead Man. So it was, I guess, somewhat poetic, and it was produced nicely and all that kind of thing, but it wasn't in front of an audience. It wasn't in front of what the soul of pro wrestling is, and that are fans. So let's hope to God that that at this time in November, when Survivor Series rolls around, that WWE is able to able to bring back at least a 50-75% audience, if possible, and bring back the Dead Man for some kind of angle that leads to a WrestleMania match with the Fiend. There doesn't need to be any physicality, none. So Undertaker doesn't have to risk anything. There's zero risk. It's just come, let's stare down each other. A declaration is made, you know. And we see where this is going. I don't know how this is not on the radar, or if it is that it's not executed and you push Undertaker Mark to say, hey, this is the last of the, this is it, right? How can you not want to end it in front of the fans? Give the fans that moment. So to me, while I still believe Undertaker's done at this moment, that's just it. He's done at this moment. When it starts to get deeper into the summer and the fall, and the layout is right in front of him, and Survivor Series is creeping up, I don't know how you don't pull the trigger. and try to, you know, talk Mark into doing it. It's really a story written for itself, because Bray Wyatt has been defeated by Undertaker in the past. So he has a bone to pick with the Undertaker, because he's on this vengeance tour of people who have wronged him in the past. And I will continue to say this because it is extremely important. Remember when Austin was coming back to Raw earlier this year, and in the Firefly Funhouse, we saw the clock say 3:16 and say, basically Bray say he doesn't have a problem with rattlesnakes. And he went and fixed the clock, and it went to November 17th. That is extremely important to remember. So went from 3:16 to 11:17. Think about that. I don't know why else they would do that if they didn't see themselves in 9 months from that time. I believe it was in early March, or I'm sorry, early January, or so, that you don't pull the trigger on this. So nonetheless, maybe I'm going too deep into this, but anyway, I think at this moment Undertaker's done, but again, I think Undertaker will eventually have that final match, the final match, and it's advertised as such with Bray Wyatt. I really believe that. I will continue to believe that, no matter how many tributes they do, no matter how many interviews they do. I think that Undertaker still wants that final send-off in front of the fans. So I'll continue to be in the minority of thinking that. So, alrighty. Well, with all that being said, we have a lot to get to, as I mentioned earlier in the show. But before I do, well, let's get another voice on the show, right? And I always encourage you to send in your voicemails to me. And that's exactly what one of our listeners did today. So we'll get to that. And you can also send in your thoughts or questions or anything you'd like to get on this show. And it's at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. realwwepodcast@gmail.com. You'll get on the show just as you're about to listen to in a moment, and I'll answer your questions or respond to your comments or rants on the air live. So with all that being said, let's get to Mr. Curtis Buck, who has some comments.
Hey, Matt. Today I wanted to get your opinion on Sheamus possibly winning the Intercontinental Championship before he retires. Because I know he's 42, and in that age bracket, they're usually winding down their career around that age. And Sheamus is my all-time favorite wrestler, and Intercontinental Championship is my absolute favorite title in all of WWE. I own the white strap belt and then the original Attitude Era belt with like the oval-looking one. But anyway, I just wanted your opinion. If you think he'd ever win the IC title before he retires, he said it multiple times. He's came back and he really wants to win that title more than anything right now, honestly. And the thing is, Sheamus, he's done it all, right? And this is the last thing he needs. And I truly hope he gets the IC title, whether he's a heel or a face. I just want to hear your opinion on it, because everybody's saying he should, and it'd make a lot of sense. And then he can win the IC title, you know, hold it for around 6 months or so, maybe longer, hopefully. And then when he loses it, he could, you know, start going to the sunset of his career. That's just my opinion. I'd like to hear yours, like I said. And anyway, thanks, Matt.
Hey, Curtis. So thanks for your question. And I have to say, you're probably the first one to ever say to me that Sheamus is your favorite wrestler. And so that's cool. I mean, because no one's ever said that to me. Most people, I'll be frank with you, and as you probably know, look at Sheamus as kind of a guy that's a good worker, a good heel, but never will be the guy to really carry the company. And he never really was. I know he had his moments in the sun, but was never really the guy. And but nonetheless, to answer your question about him and the Intercontinental title, yes, I think it's an absolute shoo-in that at some point Sheamus will be the Intercontinental title, or Intercontinental champion, rather. I think he'll probably sniff at the Universal Championship, maybe have a run with the Universal Championship. If he does, it'll be probably short-lived. But I see him right now, as you said, he's kind of on the tail end of his career, assumingly, although he's in probably the best shape of his career, so there's also that to think about, that Sheamus is probably going to become Intercontinental Champion. Very likely, I would say. It's not even possible. I think it's very likely. But the thing is, I don't think it's going to happen right now. Why? Well, AJ Styles is champion. So if AJ Styles is champion, it's very unlikely that Sheamus would be the one to take it off of him because you have heel versus heel. The only way you could do that is if you put AJ Styles in some kind of fatal four-way or triple threat where Sheamus ends up pinning the babyface in that match to protect AJ Styles, and that's how you get a heel-to-heel transfer. So that's how it could happen. My guess is that AJ Styles and Sheamus stay away for now, as Sheamus and Jeff Hardy seem to be continuing for the foreseeable future. Sheamus right now is with locked in with Jeff Hardy, probably going to stay there for a while, but eventually will get to the Intercontinental title, probably by the end of the year, and have a long run with it. I think that he is deserving. We all say it's the workhorse title, and Sheamus has certainly paid his dues. He's a believable character. He is, again, in the best shape of his career. So Sheamus, yeah. And I'd love to see it because I think he'd make a great heel champion. So, again, though, with the heel-to-heel transfer, triple threat or some kind of multi-man method only, if you're going to do this quickly. If not, it's going to have to be AJ who's going to hold on to it probably for a few months more and then drop it to a babyface who's going to hold it for a while, and then you get to Sheamus. So this could be maybe even to 2021. But to answer your question, yeah, definitely Sheamus will be Intercontinental Champion in the next, I'd say, 6 to 12 months. All right. With all that being said, let's roll into what's happening this week, and let's get into it, because I think it's important. And the biggest thing is what I saw last night on SmackDown, or two nights ago on SmackDown, rather, which was the Undertaker tribute. And I know that it's been woven throughout the show. They did the Boneyard match with AJ Styles throughout the show. That was a nice touch. And having each, having some of those feedback from each of the top legends, like Triple H, and from Shawn Michaels, and from Edge, and from Stone Cold, everybody's take on The Undertaker is nothing but respect. And the bar that he sets, Batista's comments were particularly real. And Batista is a character that, if you guys remember back with The Undertaker, I mean, he had some great battles with The Undertaker. I mean, it really, really helped push Batista to that next level. So I enjoyed the tribute. I thought it was well done. And yes, we had Baron Corbin come out and start to really berate The Undertaker and start to talk bad about him and really give it to him and talk about how he is not going to thank him, and that he basically kissed the McMahon's family's ass for 20 years to stay where he was. And at that point, I'm thinking, okay, there's a gong, right? There's got to be a gong. Where's the gong? At least Undertaker could be there to deliver a choke slam. Nothing. It was radio silence until Jeff Hardy comes out and ends up shutting up Baron Corbin, who ends up in the main event for that night. And it was Jeff Hardy versus Baron Corbin for the main event. And in the main event with Jeff Hardy and Sheamus, I mean, it was fine. I don't know why everyone had to come back out to ringside, I guess to see up close and personal everybody watch Baron Corbin get what he's got coming to him for the comments he made about The Undertaker. It's weird seeing the wrestlers chant fans' chants. And what I mean by that is when the wrestlers were standing at the beginning of SmackDown on the ramp chanting "Thank you, Taker," as if like, okay, guys, let's all chant this now. No, the chants are done by fans. Don't try to manipulate a chant being done. If the fans feel like chanting "Thank you, Taker," they'll do it, right? I mean, it was a very force-fed chant, and absolutely deserving, but that's not the point. The point is it was just kind of like almost a mandated chant, a WWE-created chant. Stop it. Stop it, right? I did not like that. I don't like when wrestlers do that. It's just not my thing. It's very exposing of the business. But again, we had in the main event with Jeff Hardy and Baron Corbin. Jeff Hardy got his win here, and it was against Baron Corbin, who, man, are they ever going to let this guy build heat? Are they ever going to let him build heat? And I'm not talking about build heat for an hour, run his mouth, and then get it shut. I'm talking about build heat for weeks, months. Can we please get Baron Corbin to a level where you just like can't handle it anymore and you need someone to just come up and slap the taste out of his mouth and finally defeat him? How is Baron Corbin supposed to get over, get to that next level when he continually gets beat? Continually. He can't even build heat for a single show. They have to blow it off in the show. I mean, you couldn't even have Baron Corbin run down The Undertaker at the beginning of the show without having Jeff Hardy come back or come down to shut him down, basically. I just think they have lost a missed opportunity here with Baron Corbin. They recognize his mic skills. He can cut a good promo, very good promo, good to very good. And he's certainly got the look that he's got a very dislikable look naturally. And they just can't help themselves. I'm a big believer of building heat for the big blow-off. Not every time. Again, this is not every single formula for every program. No. But it's consistent with Baron Corbin that they do not and just don't have the patience for building heat. Are they worried the fans are going to get angry? Well, good. That's the point. That's the point, right? You want the fans angry. You want them to be angry and see somebody come around and just kick the nuts off him, right? But I don't know. I just think they have a missed opportunity here. Any little bit of heat, it's like, I don't know why I'm thinking of this analogy, but if you work at a place where you get days off, you earn days off, like say you get 4 hours of personal time every week or every pay period, and you get X amount of sick time. WWE, the way they handle Baron Corbin is like, they get a day, they burn a day. They get a day, they burn a day. Instead of actually building up time or building up heat in this analogy, they just can't help themselves. And it's a shame. But, I mean, you had Jeff Hardy win and then everybody hit their finish on him. Big E comes in and hits his finish, right? And Big E's finish, by the way, is like the lamest finish in the world. I mean, Big E's finish is basically you landing on your stomach safely, very safely. I mean, it doesn't even look devastating. Like, it's not even in wrestling land look devastating. I mean, this guy who's an absolute monster of muscle can dive through the ropes with ease, which I wouldn't even want to see him do anyway because it's just doesn't fit his character. I don't want to see everyone do something just because they can do it. But with a Big E, man, his character for everything he's got, I don't know how the big ending even is supposed to be believable to be devastating. But anyway, the big, like seriously, Big E, please change your finish. I'm begging you. It is a lame finish. I know it's super safe. I get it. And it's an established finish. But it has never, ever, after all these years, you know, this is a big enough sample size. It has never really registered with me like, oh my God, that's such a great move, or that's it, that's got to be it. It looks like a move that you should kick out of. Like, if it wasn't established that it was a finish, you would look at it and go, well, he's going to kick out. It's basically like a DDT or a clothesline, right? I don't know. That's how I feel about Big E's finish. It's just flat out lame. Sorry. It's lame. So anyway. That's my thing on Baron Corbin and with the heat. But moving on here to Nikki Cross. I know I'm covering SmackDown a little bit. And you, by the way, you can hear our full SmackDown review from our awesome co-hosts of Brian and Greg, who cover SmackDown and get it up every single Saturday. So check that out if you want a full detailed review on SmackDown. But Nikki Cross ends up getting the victory for being next in line in a fatal four-way for Bayley's just impossible to beat championship, right? She is on, Bayley's on fire. I love the fact that they put her and Sasha on commentary every week. It's growing on me. And Nikki Cross gets the victory, ends up rolling up Lacey Evans, who hit a woman's right and was going to go for the pin, assumingly win, and Nikki Cross just took advantage. Gets the, as I told you guys, the devastating, that damn roll-up just comes out of nowhere, doesn't it? I mean, it's the most devastating move in the history of wrestling, is that roll-up. It's amazing, isn't it? So Nikki Cross gets the victory. She finally gets a one-on-one championship match with Bayley. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, whenever Nikki first won, I said, no way Nikki's going to win the belt. It's just kind of a shoe-in. It's a way to create new matchups. But I wouldn't put WWE or put Nikki Cross past winning here at Extreme Rules. And the only reason I say that is because I think Nikki Cross could have an interesting interaction with Alexa Bliss. And everyone believes that that tag team eventually is going to dissolve. And Nikki Cross as champion, I'm not against it. The thing is, do I think it's going to happen after that little bit of a reason why it could happen? I think it's absolutely not going to happen. Nikki Cross is a way to change things up. She's a way to keep things fresh for a month until Bayley gets to her opponent or opponents at SummerSlam. That's how I think this is going to go. I do not believe that Nikki Cross is going to become women's champion. And I don't think she, out of all people, will be the one to dethrone Bayley, who's on a 280-day run or whatever it is of SmackDown Women's Champion. They're going to get her to a year, probably, and I'm all for it. Bayley right now is excelling at a level that I was hoping she would as a heel. We're seeing the potential of Bayley right now being realized, and it's only going to get better, I believe. And then you can continue to tease the tension between Sasha and Bayley. I don't need to rush that. They're obviously not in any rush for that program to come to a conclusion where Sasha turns on Bayley or vice versa. But right now, and what's interesting too is this horror match. Is that what they're calling it? A horror match at Extreme Rules? Oh, good Lord. Can we just have a straight up wrestling match? Or do we need to have the production team flex their muscle of what they can do in their little cubbies of whatever software program they're using to edit this these wrestling videos, right? I mean, we already are going to have a Braun Strowman Bray Wyatt swamp match, apparently. Do we need to have a horror match? Like, what is that? Do they visit the House of Horrors that Randy Orton burned down? I mean, what is this? It's silly. It's just for those of you that love these pre-produced matches and all that, boy, you've been having a ball the last few months. For those of you that despise it like myself, it has been a nightmare of exposure of the business. It's been eye-rolling, just stupid moments, none worse than the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. I mean, nothing. I don't think I'll ever watch anything as terrible as that in my life again. I mean, I've even seen some bad movies that are just, I literally walked out. It was so bad of the movie. Two of them, I'll give you. One was Cat in the Hat with Mike Myers. Two was Kung Pao. It was like I think it was like a 1999 or 2000 movie. It was like it was a play on some Chinese movie with subtitles. It was supposed to be a comedy. It was god awful. I would put it right up there with those movies. I mean, it was that bad with Money in the Bank. So anyway, we have Braun Strowman, as I said, challenging Bray Wyatt to a swamp match. Now, it wasn't said swamp match, but that's probably what it's going to be. He wants to go back to where this whole thing started, and he wants to go and face Bray Wyatt there. And he's either going to come out the most sadistic, evil SOB, or he's going to show and prove to himself that he doesn't need Bray and he's a good guy, basically. He said in wrestling terms, he's either going to turn heel or face. It didn't say that outright, but that's exactly what it was. And I have to say, this was probably Braun Strowman's best promo he's ever cut in his life. Ever, that I've seen. And if it was memorized, he did a hell of a job memorizing it. Yeah, I mean, it sounded a little bit recorded at times in his brain, but he delivered it in a way that felt intense. He was sweating on his way to the ring. This guy just like continually profusely sweats. And then he just was on, he was on key. I mean, he was intense. He was looking at the camera. He was just into his character at that moment. And it was very, very well done by Braun Strowman. And it wasn't just about himself either. Braun Strowman painted the promo, I should say. I'm going to assume it was written, but he delivered it well. So absolute credit and props to Braun. But they painted the picture of Bray without him even being there. We learned a little bit more about his past. And this is what I've been asking for. We know Jack, you know what, about Braun Strowman. Nothing. Okay, he was in the Wyatt family. He was the black sheep. He said few words. He was the muscle. He comes out, changes his character. He can flip over big things and pull down big things. And he's a big, strong man who's a monster among men. And then they come up with the Strowman Express, which was clearly created in some kind of executive boardroom meeting that they said, we need something different. Let's come up with the... He's a freight train. He just can't be stopped. I mean, I can hear it. I can hear the cheesy crap. And, you know, again, we still don't know a whole lot about him. He does bad comedy. He's really been, I think, defined as a kind of a gentle giant that has occasionally a scary voice for kids. I mean, that's really what it is. And now they show us this on Friday, and it was a change of pace. It was a breath of fresh air. I don't know if anybody else felt this way about Braun Strowman. I just don't know how anybody can tell me he cut a better promo at any other time in his career in WWE. But what I was saying is, Braun Strowman painted a nice picture about Bray Wyatt and how evil he is, and that a water moccasin came up and bit him in the face, bit Bray Wyatt in the face after Braun said he was going to kill it, and Bray said, no, let him come. And the water moccasin kept biting Bray Wyatt in the face and biting him in the face, and there was no effect. He just kept laughing and laughing and laughing. And that's really, that's honestly, it's pretty poetic that he says that that's what Bray Wyatt did, because that's all Bray Wyatt did in his promos, was that very produced laugh, which I'm not a fan of the laugh. I'll be honest. I love Bray Wyatt's character. I love now that he has kind of like the Three Faces of Foley thing going on, but his laugh is, it's obnoxious, and it's not obnoxious in a way that's like, ooh, that's great for his character. It's just, it feels very, cartoon. I guess that's the only way to put it. It doesn't feel real, but nonetheless, the whole deal about him getting bit in the face showed him that Bray Wyatt's the devil himself. And boy, that's as deep as it goes, right? Like, that's as nasty as it goes. I mean, it doesn't get any worse than that. You can't say anybody's more evil than that. I mean, I don't remember Bray Wyatt being bit, you know, seeing bite marks. If the water moccasin continually bit Bray Wyatt, well, I think we would have seen it. But details, my friend, details, right? But again, he just painted the picture of how evil Bray Wyatt is. And that was nice. It was a nice reminder of the fact that this guy is an evil SOB and that he needs to be stopped. So it was, again, nice intensity by Braun. It was a great way to paint and remind us just how nasty and evil Bray Wyatt is with the story. And it also, it shows us and brings us on the path of the internal struggle with Braun Strowman's character of being tempted to go back to Bray, and how he said there's a part of him that he needed to lock away, and it took everything in him to lock that part of him away. And if he's worried it's going to come out. All that was very good. Again, it's called character development. I'm very glad they did that, because they don't do a whole lot of it, especially with Braun Strowman, because they just rely on his size and his look, and he's big, big man who can tip over big things, and that's really what they've relied on his entire career, which makes him look like an uneducated doofus, like a big oaf, that's like a big meathead with all brawn and no brain, right? Pun intended, I guess. So the fact that, you know, he's shown that he can speak on the mic, that he has a brain beyond just muscle, is good. And I'd like to continue more of this, and maybe we'll get a little bit more of a backstory. So, you know, great, good segment to great segment. especially A-plus to Braun and A-plus to WWE for finally saying, hey, let's talk about this character. Where'd he come from, right? So, all right, let's take a quick break. On the other side, we're going to get into a little bit more on the Raw side with Edge vowing revenge against Randy Orton and a whole lot more. So stay right here.
Stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
This podcast is sponsored by the Ever Collection. The designer brand brought you Shaquille O'Neal's Dunkman eyewear, Snooki, Jersey Shore, and K. Michael sunglasses. With over 300 styles and colors to choose from, you'll find the perfect pair for summer. Visit their website at evercollection.nyc. That's evercollection.nyc for 15% off your purchase if you use the code WWE15 at checkout. Again, head on over to evercollection.nyc and use WWE15 for 15% off of your purchase.
Dynamite Sports. We put the in sports. Swagvamous lifestyle. Defined as aspirational living blended with an unquenchable taste for the arts, fashion, sports, and technology. One having an authentic display towards this swagvamous lifestyle. Dynamite Sports. We put the in sports. Swagvamous lifestyle. Defined as aspirational living blended with an unquenchable taste for the arts, fashion, sports, and technology. One having an authentic display towards this swagvamous lifestyle.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
All right, let's get to it. And I think the highlight for Monday Night Raw, if we're going to segment this from SmackDown and Raw, is the Edge segment. In a dark ring, backed into a turnbuckle, kind of squatted down. Edge, and I did this review on my Raw review show earlier in the week, is Edge is on another planet. He's another stratosphere when it comes to promos. And it doesn't come close to anybody else. And it's nice to see that Edge is going to be focused on returning. This is not a career-ending injury. It is clearly something that is going to take time, months, maybe more than a few, to get things resolved. And I've already told you guys what my fantasy plan is, or not even my fantasy, what I think the right thing to do is when Edge comes back. Assuming the timeline matches up with what I want, that's also pretty key here, is Edge returns at the Royal Rumble. Orton goes on a tear, RKOs everybody in sight, maybe tries to punt a few people, and out comes Edge at number maybe 21 again, maybe apropos, and ends up eliminating Randy Orton, and then Orton ends up eliminating Edge, even though he's already eliminated. And you have a Orton-Edge rematch headed towards WrestleMania 37 next year. Just my thoughts. But that's how I'd fantasy book it. Who knows what the actual timeline is on Edge's recovery. That'll remain to be seen. But his promo on Raw, good Lord. I mean, it's nice to see that there's definite and very easily discernible character transformations with Orton and now Edge. Orton said that he has transferred from basically the legend or the Viper and the Apex Predator to the Legend Killer. He's gone back to his roots. And now Edge has done the same, saying that this nice happy-go-lucky Edge has been put to bed and that he's woke up something. He doesn't care about winning wrestling matches anymore, right? A fire has been lit under him, and that you woke up something evil, the rated R superstar. So get some sleep while you can, Randy. God, Edge. I mean, I really don't believe that anybody's writing these things for Edge. Edge is just killing it on his promos, absolutely killing it, and good for him. And it certainly is making me excited for his return. So, you know, just awesome. Now, here's some other stuff from Raw that I maybe didn't cover. And that's the ninjas with Akira Tozawa. I know I'm going way off topic here, but I didn't cover this on Monday Night Raw on my review. Is that, you know, I initially tore this a new one. And rightfully so, because it was on a pay-per-view with the Street Profits, and it came off very 80s, terribly done, B-rated action-adventure movie. And if that was the intent, then they hit it on the head, but that's a terrible intent, I think. That's a terrible destination to try to go to. And I think that, you know, after the match, it certainly is doing this. Now, here's the positives. While I despise those kinds of pre-produced segments, I think that's the whole thing. I think seeing those guys live in a real match and having Big Show involved is much more enjoyable than a pre-produced segment. I can't describe how much the pre-produced segments, I don't care if they're on Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views, whatever, how much they take away from the pro wrestling experience. Because it's not a movie. And WWE is trying to make a movie out of pro wrestling. And it goes against everything that pro wrestling is supposed to be about, right? You don't believe me? Here's why. In the traditional pro wrestling sense, how it's presented, and there's many ways to present it, it's supposed to be a simulated sport in which you are supposed to believe or be engaged in the environment of two athletes or more going head-to-head in competition, there's a key word, to fight for championships, to compete for championships. It's supposed to be done live. It's supposed to be done in a way that makes everything feel authentic and that there's no phoniness about it. Instead, when you have pre-produced segments, it's the opposite of what makes pro wrestling engaging and emotionally investable. Is that a word? I guess it is now. Because what you're doing with a pre-produced segment is doing what movies do, which means when you watch a movie, you inherently know it's not real because of how it's produced and the sound effects and the editing done. You know it's not real. So how am I supposed to believe that any produced segment of wrestling is real without it actually being presented as it originally has always been presented in a either live format or in a, you know, we're not cutting to commercial or I'm sorry, we're not cutting to anything else. We're staying with this match. There's no edits. That's what makes it feel authentic. And instead, the cinematic version of pro wrestling that has reared its ugly head because of the coronavirus and people giving these segments good feedbacks, guys, you need to stop, please. It gives WWE the green light to go, yes, we can now run from what we don't want to be known as anyway, and we're getting confirmation from the fans that they like this crap. Well, anyway, I'm off my soapbox. But the Akira Tozawa ninjas are more enjoyable in person, and I'm actually interested to see who that large ninja is, right? And have him square up against Big Show, perhaps. And Akira Tozawa is more interesting now than he ever was. I'll be straight with you. And he's, you know, it remains to be seen if he has comedy in him, if he has a comedic bone in his body. We'll find out. Not easy to do. But if you have a ninjas with you, you got to do something, I'm sure, with comedy, because that's exactly how it was produced at Backlash. So, okay, enough of my rants. Let's get on to something else here. And that's, you know, Charlotte Flair. And I went over this a little bit on Monday night, but Charlotte Flair has had a lot of, over the past week, conflicting reports coming out about her return schedule, which is probably the intent. WWE has been known to circulate news intentionally that they know is not true. Because what they'll do, and I actually kind of agree with this, is put out feelers or use a very, I guess, intelligent way of getting news out there without actually getting news out there that, oh, Charlotte or whoever is going to be out 6 to 9 months. when in fact WWE internally knows the timeline is 3 to 4 months. What does that do? That creates excitement when that person's perceivingly comes back early because it was unexpected. And oh my God, they're superhuman. They were supposed to be out 6 to 9 months. Oh my God, right? John Cena, when he had his pec torn off of his body or off of his, wherever the hell your pec attaches to, I'm not a physiologist. And he came back at the Royal Rumble. And when he came back at the Royal Rumble and eliminated Triple H, everybody, I remember that. At Madison Square Garden, he came in at number 30. And everyone, I didn't expect him back, but WWE internally knew that he was coming back a lot sooner. Except they put out that it was going to be out for many, many months. It's smart. It's a smart business. Because then you've kind of put that person out of your mind. And then when that person comes back early again, it's exciting. You're like, oh my God, that's great. They're back in half the time or whatever it may be. So I think that's what's happening with Charlotte. We're seeing the conflicting reports. I would anticipate she'll probably be back in time for SummerSlam. So that way we aren't going to be fooled. But she could be back or, you know, as late as maybe Rumble, right? That's the latest that I've seen, anywhere from SummerSlam to the Royal Rumble. So, you know, honestly, however long she's out, it's a nice break from Charlotte. It's a nice change of pace from Charlotte Flair being involved in every single title opportunity. In the main event segments of women's shows, she's just saturated throughout WWE, and it's exhausting. So to have her just now captured on Raw is nice because she's no longer NXT champion, NXT women's champion, so she can no longer float between brands. So that's a good thing because I think we've all had our fair share of Charlotte Flair. And it's good, it's nice timing that if she is out for a couple of months to SummerSlam, even that long will be a nice, it's a nice reprieve. It's all about absence makes the heart grow fonder. That is true in life, in art, you know, really any facet of life. And this is a great thing for Charlotte's career, I think, because we all need to just take a break from Charlotte and the Queen. We bow to the Queen. Every promo ends, you'll bow to the Queen. Has one person actually bowed to the Queen? Has anybody actually bowed to Charlotte Flair? Or is that just a metaphor for, I'm going to beat you, right? Okay, and honestly, I don't even know what she is because they defined her as a heel originally. She went to babyface, back to heel, babyface. Then she went to a heel for a while, becomes champion, NXT champion. Now she kind of just like defaulted back to babyface because of Nia Jax, I guess. Right? I mean, if she's facing Nia Jax, I'll cheer for Charlotte because I despise Nia Jax. As a character, she is just... like, I want to see somebody, like, demolish her. So, anyway, great thing for Charlotte. Great thing for the women's division to have, you know, the women say, hey, Charlotte Flair is not going to be engrossing in on our main event segment here. Let's make the most of the time that she ain't around. And that's what I would do. Boy, it's going to be great. Just take a breath. Take a breath from Charlotte Flair. I think I just did. All right. And, yeah, the Big Show's back. As they kind of like pick and choose when they want to bring him back. And it's a nice nostalgic moment when he's there. I don't really have a whole lot to say about Big Show. He's a professional. He knows how to still cut promos. He's the angry giant now. Everyone's going through like these evil transformations. Think about this, right? Big Show said he's not going out as the happy giant. He's going out as the angry giant. You have Braun Strowman teasing he could go back to the evil SOB. You have Bray Wyatt going from the Firefly Funhouse character into the swamp cult leader that is apparently the devil himself, right? You have Edge going back to the Rated R Superstar, who he mentioned was evil. You have Randy Orton saying he's no longer the Apex Predator, he is now the Legend Killer. I mean, that's like five people going through the same transformation at once. Think about that. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's coincidence. I don't see any need for these to be actually tied together. It's just interesting that it's the same thinking of character transformations into the evil version of themselves over like five different stories or five different characters. it's just weird. But anyway. And Ric Flair. It's always good to see the Nate. I don't think that 70-year-old man will be taking a bump. Very unlikely. McIntyre and Ziggler. You know, I mentioned this again on Monday Night 2, but McIntyre and Ziggler, it feels a little bit like Nikki Cross and Bayley. Meaning he's nothing more than a stepping stone to get him to Lashley Part 2 at SummerSlam, or maybe Brock Lesnar Part 2, or maybe both at once in a triple threat for the WWE Championship at SummerSlam. So, Nikki Cross and Dolph Ziggler are very similar in their roles for Extreme Rules. They can put on a good match, but they're not here for a long time. They're just here for a good time. That's essentially what they are. They come in, they do their job, they have a solid match, and they leave. And they go back into the placement that they've always been in, which for Nikki is just kind of Alexa's in Alexa's shadow. And for Dolph, it's, yeah, honestly, who knows? Maybe he can go back to Kofi saying it should have been him. I don't know. Maybe he can go back to screaming to Miz for over the IC title. I mean, I don't know where Dolph Ziggler goes with this. But I mean, the thing is with him, and WWE knows that they can plug and play with him anywhere. Dolph Ziggler is a master in the ring, and they know this. That's why he's there. He's not there because of his character. Dolph Ziggler's there because he is a master in the ring. So, all right. Well, that is really, I mean, there are some other things going on. We haven't seen, honestly, it's kind of disappointing. We haven't seen the hacker lately. I don't know where he's at. So maybe he'll pop up in the near future. It's always interesting when you see him, you know, something's about to come up. That's really, I mean, the Iconics are in the tag team division, and I was hoping they'd have more of an instant impact. They have not, at least not to this time yet, but we'll see. I love the Iconics. To me, they are one of the most underrated teams in the women's tag team division, of which consists of, you know, like three teams. I know we're including NXT, and I forget to include NXT in that, but it's a sad state of affairs in the women's tag team division. It just is. So, you know, this is an interesting time in WWE, and largely I have enjoyed their product. I really have. And they have done a lot of good of progressing storylines over the last couple of months than I thought they would initially with this this coronavirus era that we're in and the lack of fans. So, I give them props for moving things forward. I still don't want to see whatever aces they have up their sleeve. Meaning, until the fans are back, I don't want them to pull out a Ronda Rousey or pull out a CM Punk or anybody. I mean, they should have never brought Austin in on 316 Day. It was just a damn shame to see him come out with no reaction. It's a crime. I mean, somebody should be charged or fined, right? So I hope that they have some aces up their sleeve that they decided to hold off on because of the fact that this is a very exceptional time. So that's what my hope is, and I would too. I mean, I wouldn't present my best things or my top game into an audience that doesn't exist. All right. So anyway, that's what I have to say about this week. I know that there's a lot of other little things, guys, like Apollo Crews, who's the United States champion. Could it be going heel? Could it be joining MVP? I think that's a real possibility. There's just a lot going on. And yes, Apollo Crews and Dominic and Seth Rollins, who have all been doing exceptionally well. I've really, really enjoyed the whole Dominic and Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins and his disciples type of story. I think that it's just been very well done. And this past week with Dominic's eye that Seth tried to attack, but Aleister Black and Humberto Carrillo made the save. It's just a very well-crafted story, and it's easy to follow. And Rey Mysterio is having really a second wind on his career here. So there's a lot of good going on in WWE. I mean, there just is. When you look at the really the environment we're in and the expectations that we have. So, props to everybody. But all right. Well, that's really all I had today, guys. And I hope you enjoyed. I know that these weekend reviews are typically longer when I have a co-host, at least 2 hours. I know we're about half that right now. Thank you so much for listening. And I'll be back Tuesday with a co-host. We're going to be reviewing Monday Night Raw, and that should be a lot of fun. And then Wednesday is a nostalgia night, and then you guys know the schedule the rest of the week. So if you want your voice on the show again, send a voicemail from your phone. Just create a voice memo and then mail it, email it to, don't mail it. I mean, I don't even know if you can do that. Please don't mail it. If you find a way to actually send a voicemail to me via snail mail, I mean, is this real life? Like, are we in the Matrix? Like, I don't know how that will even be possible, but send it via email, please. Don't scare me with an actual snail mail voicemail, whatever the hell that is. And send it to me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. You can head on over to the Patreon version of the show if you don't want ads at patreon.com/wwepodcast. And that will be for you. For a dollar a month, you get the entire library ad-free. Head on over to the website, too, at wwepodcast.com and Instagram at wwe_podcast on Instagram or Facebook at facebook.com/thewwepodcast for all of your social media needs. I'm trying to post on Instagram. I have been a little bit more lately on Instagram, but Facebook is also there that I'm trying to be on more than I normally would be. So, guys, thanks so much for listening. As always, I'll talk to you soon. This podcast is sponsored by the Ever Collection. The designer brand brought you Shaquille O'Neal's Dunkman eyewear, Snooki, Jersey Shore, and K. Michael sunglasses. With over 300 styles and colors to choose from, you'll find the perfect pair for summer. Visit their website at evercollection.nyc. That's evercollection.nyc for 15% off your purchase if you use the code WWE15 at checkout. Again, head on over to evercollection.nyc and use WWE15 for 15% off of your purchase.
Dynamite Sports. We put the R in sports. Swagfulness lifestyle. Defined as aspirational living blended with an unquenchable taste for the arts, fashion, sports, and technology. One having an authentic display towards this swagfulness lifestyle. Dynamite Sports. We put the R in sports. Swagfulness lifestyle. Defined as aspirational living blended with an unquenchable taste for the arts, fashion, sports, and technology. One having an authentic display towards this swagfulness lifestyle.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.